This is Jim Fester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today has an extensive military background, and he's devoted a lot of analytic consideration to both the assassination of JFK and the events of 9/11. I find his interpretations remarkable for their perceptivity and plausibility. It's a pleasure to welcome Mike Sparks back to the show. Mike, welcome to the Dynamic Duo again.
Hey, glad to be here, Jim.
A real pleasure. I thought we might begin with recent reports about a mysterious aircraft that was circling over Washington, D.C. that turns out to be one of these super sophisticated electronic planes, the so-called doomsday plane, and I was wondering what your take is on its apparent presence there.
Right. The thing that's starting this up is not an old thing. It's a fairly new development in this 9/11 research coming from a guy named Mark Gaffney and, of course, David Ray Griffin. In their book is called The 9/11 Mystery Plane and the Vanishing of America. This book is coming out, actually, on September 1st, just in a few days from now.
This is a new Griffin-Gaffney book.
Yes. And the
co-authored.
Co-authored together. And
okay.
It's talking about what we already know. There are a lot of people who have seen a white 747 circling at low altitude over the nation's capital area. And so I'm going to read you the product description. Unlike other attacks, accounts, this discussion surveys the role of the nation's advanced airborne emergency airborne command post plane, and that's called NECAP. That's their little acronym. In the military, we like to make acronyms of everything. So NECAP, National Emergency Airborne Command Post plane, is called the E-4B. It's a white 747 with a blue stripe on the side, United States of America, American flag, that kind of thing. And it's talking about from the collection of film footage that they gathered from CNN, and they've put together, everything we can from open source about what we do know it doing. And then, of course, they're then tying it all together, and saying why it basically is final proof that the 9/11 attacks were done by the United States government against our own citizens. So what I'd like to discuss, or title this discussion today is, does murder disqualify you from becoming president of the United States?
I think there are quite a few cases that would illustrate that that's not the case. But, of course, it depends whether or not the murders become known or how widely they become known.
Well, the question is, how much more evidence does the American people need, or particularly the Christian right need, before they will disown the Republican Party for being traitors, for murdering over 3,000 Americans on 9/11. How much more proof do they need? Do they need a burning bush experience from God in each one of their individual lives for them to know this?
I think you raise a great question, Mark, a great question.
Well, Mike, the other point is that I would like to discuss, why this is a smoking gun.
Yeah.
The official excuse for the E-4B was as taking part in the Vigilant Guardian, a mock terrorism exercise at the time, and it was at Andrews Air Force Base, fully fueled and loaded, and it was going to take part in this mock exercise. And of course, everybody that knows anything about the 9/11 attacks or watched the movie Loose Change, what are the chances of the raghead terrorist staging the 9/11 attacks the very day that the entire United States military is on exercise practicing the exact duplicate type of attack upon the White House? It's like that Tropic Thunder movie that just came out. I'm a dude playing a dude in the movie of a dude kind of thing. Come on. The chances of this being an accident or, a great, thing for them pushing their terrorist act, at the ideal time that we're, pretending to be, responding to the same similar terrorist attack is zero. It's zero. It's absolute proof that the U.S. government is behind the 9/11 attacks. And when I mean the U.S. government, the current people in charge in our government are directly responsible for the 9/11 attacks. That's why you're not going to obviously get any official investigation about who actually did the 9/11 attacks. And then according to this, Griffin, in his earlier book on 9/11, says that the book, that one's called 9/11 Contradictions. He says that the government story, the official story, keeps changing like a criminal changes his story under interrogation.
Yeah.
No innocent explanation for it. Why would you change your story? You know, if the U.S. government just incompetent and they had a stupid boob of a story, you just stick to the story and just look stupid. But no, they keep changing their story. And that means that they're the guilty culprits and they're changing their story like criminals do because they are criminals. So we're in a quandary right now in our country where basically we have a criminal federal government and these criminals have to be pushed out of power. And the only way to do that is obviously from the top, when the head criminal leaves office, hopefully in November. And so you ask the question, who are we going to elect? Now, my next question I'd like to ask is a hypothetical question to, you know, like Christian right people. If your president, you know, comes to power and he has a social agenda, you know, and it's the one you support, which is go to church, you know, pray, you know, don't use cuss words, be a nice person and all that stuff. And yet, during the course of his presidency, he then murders 3,000 Americans in a treasonous act. Do you disown them? So it's not really a hypothetical question. It's actually a true question. And the fact of the matter is the Christian right have not disowned President Bush, who, even though he has clearly shown himself to not be a Christian, to be a traitor, to be an immoral person, guilty of the crimes, they haven't disowned him. And why is that? And it's because because he backs their social agenda, he can basically do no wrong. You see?
Yeah.
And that's the same faulty reasoning. I don't even want to use the word reasoning to give it the you know, that much credence. But that's what they're using with McCain now. They're saying they don't like McCain, but that Obama's worse because Obama is going to bring this social agenda that they disagree with, you know, chicks kissing and all that kind of stuff, you know, all that kind of demented sex stuff. And, you know, I want to talk more about that, too, about the right wing is obsessed with sex. They hate sex. So, you know, in replace for the sin of sex, they like the sin of violence. Murder and killing is okay for the Christian right. But they'll say, you know, we got to vote for McCain because we can't tolerate all this silly stuff that Obama would bring in. But I bring up to this point that nobody, obviously, in the media is bringing up. That basically Hillary Clinton and John McCain are murderers. They should be disqualified from being president of the United States, just like the Republican Party should be disqualified from being rewarded with four more years of power for what they did on 9/11 and since. John McCain and Hillary Clinton should also be disqualified from being president. And see, that's where I'm trying to get at about this social agenda. Just because somebody has a social agenda that you like, if they break the number one moral imperative, which is the murder, and they violate that, they should be disqualified from being president. We know that under the Clinton administration, Bill and Hillary killed about 100 people. That should disqualify. John McCain, when he was a Navy pilot, started the forestal fire that killed over 130 sailors. That should disqualify him, too.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mike Sparks. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, is a very astute analyst and critical thinker when it comes to complex issues like 9/11 and JFK, as anyone who's been listening to the show already must fully appreciate. Mike, please do continue.
Well, we know that John McCain was on USS Forrestal when it had the fire in 1967. And what happened was he was in an A-4 Skyhawk, and behind him was an F-4 Phantom. Okay, the Skyhawk is a single-engine jet. It's an attack plane, very compact, excellent airplane, delta-wing plane. And what happened was, well, let me describe the F-4 Phantom for the listeners. F-4 Phantom is a delta-wing plane also with the outer wings fold up a little bit, and it's got two engines. It's much bigger. It's a fighter bomber, and it's got two people in it, a pilot in the front and a radio intercept officer in the back. What happened was McCain was a practical joker. He let fuel pool up into his tailpipe and then started his engine, causing a flame to shoot out the back end of his Skyhawk, which was in front of the F-4 Phantom. This fire caused a Zuni rocket. This is a 5-inch rocket that we shoot, at the ground, to shoot out of the F-4 Phantom. It didn't explode, but it punctured the fuel tank of, McCain's Skyhawk, and it started spreading fuel all over the flight deck, which caused other fuel tanks to detonate and a bomb to blow up, and before long, the whole flight deck is on fire, threatening the entire carrier. And what happened is 134 sailors were killed, and 161 were injured. And what happened was everyone knew McCain did it, and they rushed him off the carrier. They put him on another carrier so he would avoid being lynched. He's never manned up to this, never taken responsibility for this, never admit that he was sorry. If I was in his shoes and I murdered 134 people, I'd go do something to save 134 people's lives. I'd go become a doctor or something, or, work in an emergency room, or, become
just
an ambulance driver.
Just a correction on terminology. I mean, it's not a murder. He killed them, but they were accidental deaths. They weren't intended by him. A murder is an intentional, deliberately bringing about the death of someone.
Well,
it may be a fine point in the political context, but obviously it's important if we're going to use terms like murder.
Oh, well, and I call it murder, but I mean, I see what you're saying by manslaughter, but that wasn't his intent. That wasn't premeditated murder. But I disagree with you on that one, because when you play with such things, you don't play with such things. You play with, a fighter jet on an aircraft carrier, you run the risk of murdering people. And it's just like if you get drunk and you're driving a 2,000-pound car, you're making a decision of irresponsibility that is setting up a stage for manslaughter. I say it's murder, but, I don't want to quibble with you on that. The point is that he's never owned up to this, and I think he should be disqualified for running for president.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great issue to raise, and I'd like to see the press raise it. I mean, this is absolutely crucial. He touts his military experience. He's supposed to be, so competent in this area that he has committed atrocities like this, even if they were not completely intentional. They were certainly reckless. And, of course, I'm very concerned about McCain in terms of his mental health, because they've released a staggering number of pages of records about his physical health, but nothing about his mental health. And surely anyone who's been subjected to 5.5 years of torture, which is his greatest claim to fame, has been subjected to kinds of torment that are going to leave you emotionally and mentally warped.
Yeah, I definitely think that he should be disqualified for running for president because of his medical condition. He's obviously very old, so he shouldn't be president because of that. But the problem we're having there is this fascism. We've allowed during this 8 years of the Bush administration to let them con us into this idea that if you're a man in the military in uniform, you're on a pedestal, and you're no longer able to be scrutinized for anything you do. And at the same time, they're laughing behind the scenes because they're going, haha, I can now order these heroes to their deaths, because now we can't criticize anything that they do. We can't criticize how they're being sent anywhere, because this aura of heroism has given them and us, the neocons, the, covering, patriotic correct covering, so that they can do anything they damn well please, which is abuse them, which is in the case of Iraq, to go over there and make corporations rich with an oil and security racket. So what you have is this, again, this false use of a good idea. You know, I'll talk about the neocons in a minute. The idea of, you know, you have a social agenda that your president's advancing, good, and then taking that and saying, okay, now that gives us free license to do evil here, here, and here. They're also doing the same thing of honoring our soldiers as a smokescreen to go do evil here, here, and here.
Yeah, of course.
Now, this is very clever, evil stuff, and the Christian right lacks the moral due diligence to see what's being done to them. I can't believe they're so naive and stupid. You know, they talk about the salt influence losing its savor. That's what the so-called Christian church has done, because you go back to the neocons and see where they come from. They come from the Chicago School of Philosophy that Leo Strauss was the main teacher over there, and they all were students under him. He taught that America, just like any other country, needs a national mythology. And what they did was is they just took right-wing fundamental Christian views and built a mythology for that, using, you know, Karl Rove saying to Bush, use that and make that your base. And the Christians are not smart enough to realize that if they, you know, have a president that, you know, embeds their social agenda of things that they want, but then he rejects that social agenda and the most important point, which is thou shalt not kill, then you have to disown it. You have to disown him and his administration and disown him, because otherwise he's going to discredit Christianity. And they haven't. The Christian right has not done that. The Christian right is soft on violence. The Christian right is soft on killing. Murder and killing is okay, because the biggest sin to them is sex.
Well, you know, it's really fascinating that you have drawn that conclusion, because it's one I drew on completely different premises in a book that I have recently published related to evolution, creationism, creation science, intelligent design, and a whole lot of social issues, too, that get thrown into the pot, including abortion and stem cell research, cloning, and the like. And I think that you're completely right about that. It's really quite fascinating that they're not just... Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Mike Sparks. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, is discussing his analysis of 9/11, and he's extended into political domain and how religion tends to be manipulated for political purposes. Mike, I think what you're saying is very astute.
Well, I want to talk about how I got to the same conclusion that you did. There's in philosophy really two basic ideas. You know, there's the Stoicists. Which are, you know, people who, Stoics and Epicureans. You got people who look at life and they try to live life rigidly and energetically, follow rules, make rules, form governments, and just try to make something of this life. Then you got the Epicureans, which are people who are laid back, who say don't take anything too seriously, you know, that's where you get into excesses, wars, and that kind of stuff. And they're more kicked back and laid back and, you know, are more eat, drink, and be merry, tomorrow we shall die type people. You will find that that person on the right is the person, the Stoic, is the person who's going to take a look at people and be very snobby towards them. He's going to say, here's my rules and regulations. You're not living up to them. You must be a piece of feces. That's the tendency. And then the Epicurean is going to be more forgiving and saying, you know, hey, you know, that's what the other person's doing. That's how they live. You will then see that that is really a cleavage between the letter of the law in the right, the Pharisees, you know, in the Bible, and then you've got the left-wing people are more of the spirit of the law. We'd say in the Bible the Sadducee group. But anyway, the point is there's a spirit of the law, and then there's a letter of the law. What you have when you have a person who's live and let live, you're going to see his tendency to sins of sex. You know, that's because it's more of a human base, more forgiving, easygoing kind of thing. And then you got on the right wing, you've got this snobbery. You've got this snobbery, and it's to our horror, we've found during the 8 years of the Bush administration that these snobs will then take their condemnation to the next level, which is to kill people, to murder people, people who disagree with us. It's in their mind, warped minds, seen as okay. So you didn't like, let's say, the Clinton administration, the whole Monica Lewinsky type thing, which we know now in a more sophisticated level looks like it was an Israeli, you know, swallow operation to entrap him and to force him to do things, not just him having uncontrolled sexual lust. But what we see is if you don't like that kind of stuff, and that's bad, there's an even worse sin, and that's murder, the sin of murder. So, yeah, Bush may not be going around, having sex with interns, but don't you think killing 3,000 Americans on 9/11, killing over 4,000 of our soldiers in a poorly conceived war, we'll call it, in Iraq, and then killing over 100,000 Iraqis, don't you think that is a far greater, worse sin?
Well, of course I do, but you're suggesting that to the right, this illicit casual sex between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky might appear to be the greater crime?
Yes. I mean, I used to be in that realm. I'm a Bible college graduate. They are very, very uptight about sex. Sex to them is happiness. And really deep down inside, they see people as fallen. They see people of, going to hell. But they forget the point that even though you're going to hell, God says each one of us is made in his image, even if you're Saddam Hussein, even if you're Adolf Hitler.
Mike, let me read a couple passages from Render Unto Darwin where I talk about this. This is in the fifth chapter,
okay.
Religion, Morality, and the New American Fascism, on pages 126 and 127.
Sounds like a book I need to get.
Yeah. The obsession of the Christian right with abortion, stem cell research, and cloning appears to have deep roots in its preoccupation with human sexuality. According to its public proponents, there are only two reasons for humans to have sex, which are procreation and recreation. Procreation is ordained by God. Recreation is not. Hence, if sex is not motivated by a desire to procreate, it contravenes God's will and becomes an animalistic exercise. It follows from this framework that contraception and birth control, and even sex education and Planned Parenthood, are unacceptable to them and in the eyes of God. I'll skip apart and just add a few. The division of intercourse between humans into reproduction and reproduction, for example, affords the problem is not simply that the existence of God cannot be proven, but that there is no end of sources claiming to speak for God. The division of intercourse between humans into reproduction and recreation, for example, affords a nice case of the fallacy of the species bifurcation, in which two alternatives are juxtaposed and treated as though they were mutually exclusive and jointly exhaustive. Think about the third alternative. Sexual relations are the expression of affection between adults in a loving relationship. Here's more talking about how there's been opposition to the right wing about this vaccine for young girls that will keep them from having uterine warts and so forth, different kinds of infection. Now that the FDA has approved the vaccine, conservatives are already working feverishly to limit its apparent use. limit or prevent its use. It would be difficult to imagine a more clear-cut case in which acceptance of religious doctrines contravenes scientific progress in the health and welfare of women. Does anyone seriously believe that a young woman will be motivated to have sex because she knows of the existence of a vaccine that protects her from cervical cancer and genital warts? This appears to be on a par with the attitude displayed by the religious right in relation to abortion, as though a young woman would become pregnant in order to have an abortion. These policies provide striking support for the inference that the religious right is not just opposed to abortion, but actually obsessed with sex, not really pro-life, but anti-sex.
No, you're absolutely right, and they're also unbiblical. There's a whole book in the Bible called the Song of Solomon. It's like out of a Playboy magazine. It's about why sex is beautiful between a man and a woman. Of course, when they read, they say, well, this is an allegory about the church, God's love for the church. No, it isn't. It's about a man and a woman enjoying each other because God made us bodies that enjoy sex. So it comes down to basically their killjoys. The people in the religious right don't want human beings to be happy. They're down on human beings. They're snobs. They're down on each other. And then the ultimate sanction when you're down on somebody is to murder them. And that's not the Bible, of the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible gives us things that are good. Yes, we are not perfect. We're not going to earn our way to heaven of it. But we're never trash.
Well, it's certainly a violation of the Ten Commandments and far removed from the idea of treating others as you'd like them to treat you.
Yeah. Right. So, but the basic idea, though, is that these guys obsessed with sex and happiness are just completely letter of the law. They don't know how to live with the spirit of the law. So it's the next thing that we learn to our horror in the Bush administration is that they're incompetent. A person that can't live by the spirit of anything and just lives by the letter of the thing ends up having like guardrails, like you're driving a car and your guardrails to keep you going over the cliff keep getting narrower and narrower to where you're jammed. You can't even drive the car on the road anymore because you've just put yourself into a roadblock, self-created roadblock. So basically, these neocons obsessed with life, you know, Karl Rove, he's mad at the world because his mom committed suicide. You can just tell that guy's mad at the world. These are the kind of people who are just complete nihilists, and if you look at it, they're actually Marxist-Leninists themselves. The neocons are Leo Straussian, are really nothing more than just a anti-version of the thing that they hate, which is the Marxist-Lenin, and they have dialectics themselves, and basically they say that they're going to give to the people, the American people, this mythology that they are to follow. But meanwhile, they don't really take any truth seriously. There is no truth to them. It's just a way of manipulating and controlling them. Meanwhile, they're going to go overseas, set up false democracies, and get rid of them.
Mike, how old was Karl Rove when his mother committed suicide?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up. I think it was early 80s.
Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, Mike Sparks. We'll be right back. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, is sharing his insights about 9/11, politics, the Christian right, and a host of other issues. Mike.
Yeah, 1981, Rove's mom committed suicide, which means he was at 31 when it happened. That's still pretty young.
He was 30. He was 31?
Yeah, he was born in 1950.
Okay.
And 1969, the man he thought was...
Do you have any idea why she committed suicide?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. The man he thought was his father left the family in 1969, so
yeah.
He's a young man, divorced his mom, and it was later known he was a homosexual. After his parents divorced, he learned from his aunt that that really wasn't his father, so you got a second betrayal right there. So you got multiple betrayals, you know, happening to poor Rove, who said
boy,
he was
really something.
A nerdy guy. In high school, he wore the, you know, glasses, the pocket protector.
Who was his father?
Well, his actual father, let me go back here. His actual father, you know, ran off, of course. He was born second of five children. That's another bad sign. That means he's not getting much love because he's got to fight for affection from four other kids. Raised in Spark City, Nevada, though, that's good. Get the joke? Okay, anyway, he's a Norwegian and
Sparks.
Yeah, his biological father was a geologist, left the family when his older brother were children. That's the betrayal right there. But he didn't know about it until later. So he got like a multiple bunch of betrayals, so this guy's going to have a very sour view of life. And then when his, you know, the mom, your mom is very important to you. And then when she commits suicide, that's, my God, I just can't even imagine how much rejection and you would feel. Because, you know, she should have stayed alive at least for him, right? You know what I mean? There's all kinds of things that would go through your mind.
Yes.
So I have a lot of, I feel bad for him. But I can see why he's such a hate God, hate the world type guy, Karl Rove, and hates religion because, you know, he's going to see God as, you know, there's no God to let all of his terrible things happen to us.
By the way, I see where Mark Gaffney has an earlier article about the plane circling the White House on the Journal of 9/11 Studies.
Right. Now, let's go into that while we're there. We've pretty well seen that the Republican right is, you know, in this kind of very judgmental, condemnatory type people, and they're easily swayed to kill people for the thinnest excuse, which I think, you know, should disqualify them from national service. They should not be rewarded at the White House for another 4 years for all the stunts. You don't have to agree with what I believe they all did. Believe me, they've done so much damn wrong in the last 8 years. Just take your pick. Whatever, they should not be rewarded at the White House, even if we have to vote for some tutti-frutti guy. Just as a matter of principle, the American people should not reward traitors with the White House. The party that wronged the country in the last 4 years, as a matter of principle, we should vote somebody else in. Just to let them know that they're not going to get away with it. I don't care what McCain is saying that he's bringing to the table, you know, as a social agenda.
Well, the country has truly lost its moral compass, in my opinion.
That's because of money.
Mike, I mean,
money is God. We don't tell people today, young people, the number one thing that is invaluable and most important thing in this life is to have a philosophy of life that you live by that's morally sound. We say today, all throughout society, and of course the elites that want us to consume put this out, that your value as a person is how much money you make and how sexy you look. So you got, you know, people that are being put up on pedestals as heroes that are rich, you know, whether they be, you know, somebody that creates, you know, operating system like Microsoft, which I understand there was the other people with him, not Bill Gates that did the Microsoft thing. It was Wozniak and the other guy who did all the work. But anyway, he's real famous and rich. You've got rock musicians. All they do is entertain us with music. And you got all these people who aren't doing anything tangible for society, but they're, you know, up on a pedestal dreaming rich. As long as being rich is the thing that is your value, then, you know, if you cut corners and you cheat and you lie and you do all kinds of evil things to get rich, that doesn't matter because, you know, all that matters is that you get rich and you become a quote-unquote success with affluence. And that's something that, of course, the neocons are all driven by. They're all driven by there is no truth in this life, there is no God, there is no morality. All that matters is being top dog. So if that's the thing, then that's the corruption. The love of money has corrupted definitely the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is so corrupt, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but you know the elephant is a symbol of the Republican Party, right?
Of course.
Well, they have a symbol. They have a red, white, and blue elephant, and it's got three stars in the hump of the elephant. Do you know that in early 1980s, 1990s, they turned the stars upside down? A five-pointed star is a symbol of man. You know, you remember Leonardo da Vinci's painting where he's got man spread? You know, he's got his man with the legs spread and his arms spread? That's a five-pointed star, right?
Oh, sure.
Right. The famous Leonardo da Vinci drawing.
The anatomical drawing, yeah, sure.
Right. The idea is the head is the point of the star. Well, in Satanism, when you turn the five-pointed star upside down, that's putting your genitals as the head. You follow your lust. As this thing that drives your body. So that's why the upside down star is what is a symbol in Satanism. That's what the Republican Party did to their elephant symbol. They turned the stars in the Republican elephant upside down. That's not an innocent act. Why change it at all? Just leave it alone. You see? That was
when
little,
did this happen, Mike?
I have to go back, I think, 1994, 93, something like that.
Mm.
And that's not an innocent act. That's the sign that...
This would be during the administration of George Herbert Walker Bush, maybe?
It was during Bush 1, yes. You know. So what I'm saying is, you know, whether, you know, you buy into all that stuff, the fact is you got to deal with the facts that you can see, that basically the Republican Party has been hijacked by people who aren't really moral conservative people, who are just trying to live upright lives, that to help people with some mercy in there. There are a bunch of people who are just manipulating the masses to get them living this real strict, stoical life so that they could basically manipulate them and send them and their sons to wars to make themselves rich. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So, if the Republican Party repented of the 8 years of Bush.
It's very difficult to understand how, given that the, you know, that the super rich is really the interest represented by the Republican Party, and of course they use all these social issues to draw in a lot of, well, you know, religious evangelical types to vote against their own economic interests. But you'd think from the point of view on the basis of abortion and stem cell research, cloning, and all that. But you'd think that the fact that they really are serving the interests of the super rich would turn them off, because, I mean, if the love of money is the root of all evil,
right,
if you're supposed to give all your money to the poor, if it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle, what are the evangelicals doing supporting the super rich?
They shouldn't be, because you know the super rich have taken their lust for money and power and turned it into murder. It turned it into actual wars that are immoral, you know, and have murdered thousands and thousands of people. And just because they're ragheads, you know, I use that because that's the language that they use.
To dehumanize the opposition.
Right.
The Japanese were slant eyes, or Vietnamese were slopes and all that. This is a common characterization to make it easier for soldiers, Marines, and sailors to kill the enemy, because they're treated as though they weren't even human.
Right, but what they do is they use Islam. They'll say, these guys are Islam, they're opposing Christianity, so it's okay to kill them. Neither mind that they don't have the sophistication to understand, wait a minute, these guys were against Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Saddam Hussein was an enemy of Iran. He's a counterweight to these guys. Why are we overthrowing Iraq right now? Oh, I see. We've got now companies making lots of money rebuilding Iraq perpetually, draining their oil supplies and getting first dibs on the oil, and then there's companies running around keeping the place safe. You see, they got to be more shrewd about life.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mike Sparks. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Jim Spencer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, is offering his analysis of 9/11 in the context of political and religious considerations. Mike, I think what you have to say is really quite fascinating.
Yeah, my favorite verse in the Bible is Jesus wept. And the reason why that's my favorite verse in the Bible, because Lazarus has just died, so why is Jesus weeping? He's going to raise him from the dead in a few seconds. Why is he crying? Why does God care? Because God gives a damn. That's my favorite verse in the Bible, because it reminds us that God cares, and death is sad. Well, the right-wing Republicans that are so quick to condemn people don't feel that way about fellow human beings. And the sadness is that you're having a lot of Americans dying overseas, needlessly. Maybe they'll learn that lesson, because nature abhors a vacuum. If you're this right-wing, stoical-type person, and you don't have a love for other human beings, something has to fill the void. And if you go back into your history, you will see that the Puritans, when they came over to the United States, they started this materialism baloney. The early Puritan leaders said it was okay for a man to have wealth and amass wealth. It was a blessing from God from above. And you can see how this has crept in to a nation like the United States, which is a large landmass of natural resources yet to be exploited, right? So you can see this manifest destiny of conquering the West tied in with this rigid, uptight with sex, down on other fellow human beings type puritanical religion coming together to create the disaster that we have with a nation that's gobbling up the world's resources at a huge rate. Because of consumer, you know, it's created consumerism.
That's so uncharitable, too. That ought to be something that the religious right adamantly opposes. They should oppose colonialism, exploitation, below living wages, sweatshops, women's subjugation, and all that. I mean, these are not things, in fact, that they seem to be much concerned about.
And I'll tell you why. I've lived it, so I've got the T-shirt. I can tell you why. It's because they misunderstand the fact that everybody's made in God's image. They don't believe that. They don't believe that. They don't believe that from the book of the Bible begins telling us everyone's made in God's image. They don't believe that. They believe that if you aren't saved and, you know, have God's pardon, you're feces. You're trash because you're going to hell. They don't get it. The whole point of Jesus weeping is, yes,
you know,
people are going to be damned. But that's why he's crying.
This is their form of arrogance and discrimination and sense of superiority over other people.
Right, and it's unbiblical. The Bible says everybody's made in God's image, period. It doesn't mean that they're going to work their way to heaven and fix themselves. It says that that's the dichotomy.
In fact, they don't even have to do good works, do they? All they have to do is be saved, and that gives them superiority.
Well, it gets them a pardon from a legal perspective, so they're off the hook. And everybody who isn't off the hook, then they take it and they're wrong. They play God by saying, well, then you're trash. No, 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 no. Saddam Hussein, Adolf Hitler, all these guys that are doing evil things, and or anyone who doesn't have the pardon, is still made in God's image. That's why Jesus wept. The sadness is they are not trash, you see. But the right-wing people think that if you're not saved, you're trash. Wrong. They don't understand that life's more complicated than that. The fact is man is a killer angel, just like in Michael Shera's book on the Civil War. Man is both angel and killer. That's the sadness of it. That's why Jesus is weeping, because these people are not trash. You see, but there's no love for other people in the right-wing, fundamentalist church, because they're wrong in the Bible. They're absolutely fundamentally wrong in their view of human beings. I'll tell them that next time I see them. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, so that condemnation then manifests itself in a foreign policy that's unmerciful. You know, they want to go around killing people, when if you want to defeat Islam, show that it is an unsound religion. Get a think tank of people together like we did for Nazism, and you make some radio-free Islam TV shows, radio shows, and you show the people, hey, raghead, don't believe in Islam. It's silly. It's stupid. It's contradictory. It's, make them change from an enemy to a friend. No, the average right-wing Karl Rove guy wants to kill the raghead. That doesn't kill an idea. That just kills the person who we should be trying to save. Every human being is a brother of us. We should try to make them into our friend. The enemy is death, not other people who disagree with us, that, you know, cross us and that we want to kill. And that's what we've got, this angry, kill raghead, fascist feeding frenzy that we've had for the last 8 years. In the Bush administration, it's perverting our country. But I want you to see that it goes hand in hand, and if you don't have a love of mankind, you gotta have nature abhors a vacuum. You fill something else into that vacuum, and that's materialism. Say, none of this is the Christian church has rejected. You know, the right-wing Christian church. They don't have the love of mankind. So you see how it also creates military incompetence. I was trying to show you that the way that we need to fight this radical Islam is to discredit it with ideas, with the truth. We're not doing that. We're trying to just kill individual humans that believe in this with, you know, laser-guided bombs. Then we'll end up killing villages in the process. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
there's an actual linkage
between
military incompetence and evil, immoral ideas.
Yeah, the fallacy of a true believer is there are just as many true believers whose true beliefs conflict with your true beliefs, and it makes your religious beliefs, which you take to be infallible, purely a function of where you were born, by whom you were born, the religion and culture in which you were raised. I mean, there's nothing rational about it. It's not as though you're taking a survey of different religions, you know, Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, Zoroastrianism, you know, whatever, to determine which is the best religion for you.
Right. It's not a fair choice. It's not a objective and honest choice. So you can't hold it against people that they chose the wrong choice when they've only had bad choices put in front of them.
Yeah.
So there's a lack of mercy here, and there's a lack of tactical competence. They're just because these people are so angry at life, and they're so out of touch with, you know, the common touch of mankind.
Yeah, mind
here
you, we don't want to overgeneralize. I mean, you're speaking roughly statistically, because there are going to be exceptions in every religion who have a more enlightened point of view.
Well, I'm just saying that's the Karl Rove base.
Yeah.
The Republicans that they used to get that edge, then you know how close the election was.
Well, I think their edge came from electronic voting machines that were programmed to give the Republicans about a 15%
benefit. Well,
they
didn't just rely on the Republican, the so-called Christian right to give them the election. They had little
That's more the subterfuge. That's more the cover. You know, that's the camouflage where they can claim there was this huge, sudden, late surge from the Christian right just to conceal the fact that they figured out how many votes they needed and manipulated the polls, the count, so that it would come out right, usually very late in the morning, like 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, but right now the Republican right is doing this calculation to try to support McCain, to rationalize in their own mind.
I don't understand how anyone could take McCain seriously as a candidate. I mean, you know, these two biggies from his war, the fact that he was subjected to torture for 5.5 years means for sure he's temperamentally, emotionally, and mentally unqualified because he's so severely scarred and warped. And I'd like to get clinical psychologists to address this issue now before the man becomes the occupant of the Oval Office. And then the Kitty Hawk disaster is so completely reckless and irresponsible. I mean, if we talk about judgment, here's a man who has incredibly poor judgment, and that's supposed to be his complaint about Barack Obama. Stand by. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Special guest Mike Sparks. We are talking about 9/11 politics, religion, a whole host of issues. Mike, let's go back to 9/11 and reconstruct your argument, which I thought was really quite interesting from the top down. You know,
well, it seems to me that there was a quiet period when the Bush administration took over, and that was very suspicious. I remember at the time going, "Boy, not much is really happening here." You know, no one's talked about this. I'm paid to bring up new subject here. But it just seems to me that they were plotting something. Now, a lot of people will say, well, this is a plot that took place years ahead of time. I think they were plotting to have the 9/11 attacks happen, obviously, before, you know, even the Bush administration began. But they were out of power at that point. And the minute they gained power, the plans went into overdrive to stage the false flag, you know, New Pearl Harbor attack.
Yeah.
You see? So that period needs to be looked at. What was the Bush administration doing, you know, from...
For the first 6 months, roughly.
Yeah, until, you know, September 10th. And, you know, my research has been into finding the smoking gun of Ted and Barbara Olson, of course. Barbara Olson, you know, attack dog against the liberals, you know, and all that. She was constantly on Larry King Live, and she was constantly attacking the, you know, this Gary Condon guy, who seems to have been a part of the other conspiracy group. It seems to me that this liberal conservative divide might even be existing in the conspiracy groups that try to run the world. I think there might be an Eyes Wide Shut sex-obsessed conspiracy group, and there might be a violence-obsessed loose change conspiracy group. And then every time we have an election, we just choose between which group the figurehead is allegiance to. But I want to get back to real quickly to Barack Obama. At least I know, as far as we know, he hasn't murdered anybody. He hasn't manslaughtered anybody.
Good.
He appears to have a conscience. To me, that makes him more qualified than the Manchurian candidate potential of John McCain, who obviously doesn't seem to have any conscience whatsoever, might even be mind-controlled or mind-perverted from his
Or senile, you know. I mean, when
exactly
he talks, he can't remember how many homes he has. Obviously, he's caught between a rock and a hard place. But that kind of equivocation, you know, is really a form of prevarication. When he defines, you know, being rich as having 5 million or more, I mean, this is out of touch with reality. And he said so many other stupid things, even suggesting that Cindy ought to participate in the Miss Buffalo Chip contest, which is a lewd event with a topless competition. I mean, you know, the guy's really out, and in not knowing the difference between Sunni and Shia or whether Iraq has a border with Pakistan. I mean, this is pretty bad.
Well, what it is the American people are caught into this automatic pilot mode. They feel that there's brand X and there's brand Y, and they have to choose between these brands. And in this case, it's what social agenda they're going to bring to the White House. They forget, and they should know now, clearly from 8 years of George Bush, that you must look at the man. Is what kind of man is that person going to be? Because it's not going to be about brand X and Y. Once he's in the presidency, issues are going to come up, and it's not going to be about brand X or Y. It's got to be, does he have a conscience? Is he a murderer? Is he a person without any moral base? And Bush has taught us that we must pay attention to this and must never put somebody without a conscience in power ever again.
You know, I think you're absolutely right about that. Absolutely right about that, because the Bush administration has been using their position of power to loot and rape and pillage. I mean, not just Iraq, but the United States itself.
Oh, you're right. And everyone should know that, but what they should know about that is not that Bush bad. Got it. Don't reelect him. He's on his way out. No. We made a fundamental error by electing Bush, thinking he was a nice guy. He seemed nice, he seemed like a good-natured fellow, and he would learn on the job, and it would be okay. But really, we found out he's not a nice guy. He's a very narcissistic, conscienceless, egomaniac with this veneer that Karl Rove taught him to put on of being this good Christian kind of guy that you'd want at your barbecue, not realizing he's barbecuing 3,000 Americans on 9/11. You know, this guy is a psychopath, psychosociopath. And McCain is even worse than Bush. Bush, before he, you know, was elected, we knew what he was like. McCain right now is worse than Bush, you know, pre-presidency.
And how would you nail down some of those ways in which he's worse?
Well, let's take the POW issue. This is the issue. He should be totally on the side of the families. When confronted with whether there were Americans still in Vietnam, duh, yes. They do that as a matter of principle to use them as bargaining chips to get reparations, which we refuse to pay. They already did it with the French. You know, there were French POWs that weren't released until 1968 from 1954. Come on. When he was confronted with that, McCain sided with the North Vietnamese. When families of the loved ones confronted him to go after and force the Vietnamese to cough up these guys, he sided with them. You know, big money interest. You know, we want to normalize relations with Vietnam. Don't not piss them off. Make excellent things in, you know, North Vietnamese slave labor shops. I've got one right here. I've got a wooden CH-47 Chinook helicopter model made in Vietnam. I didn't know when I bought it. Well done. You know, there's a lot of money to be made by these hardworking Vietnamese people with high skills. So, you know, bringing up the Vietnam War is counterproductive to that. You see what I'm saying? If money's your god, then honor and life and death just swept under the rug. And McCain swept that right under the rug. You know, he would not stick up for his fellow POWs.
there are lots of stories about his collaborating with the North Vietnamese at the time that suggest that his incarceration there wasn't nearly so traumatic as he makes it out to be.
Well, the traumatism is from his ejection. Apparently, he didn't pull in his legs and arms before he ejected from his Skyhawk. And there are also possibilities that he didn't jink his airplane, one of those things that we don't want to put out there. But, you know, hey, we got to talk about it sooner or later. When you fly an airplane in combat in visual daylight, you need to jerk your plane around. You know, it's called jinking. You don't fly straight and level because that just gives the gunners, hey, he's going to be at point B soon. Let's shoot right there, and he'll fly right into it. McCain, lazy pilot, not very good, didn't jink his airplane, got shot down. You know, A4
he more or less allowed it to happen in a situation where he ought to have been able to evade it.
Yeah, so what happened is he gets shot down. Of course, the plane being painted all white does not help. You know, that's another that's an institutional incompetence.
So you mean, are the military markings on that aircraft have been obliterated?
No, the plane is all white. The airplane should have been a light gray. The U.S. Navy goes back and forth between making planes highly visible for carrier operations and then trying to camouflage them so they don't get shot down. And he was caught in an era where everyone was trying to make their planes visible. That's okay for peacetime, but when you fly over North Vietnam, you don't want to be flying a white airplane.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mike Sparks. Jim Fetzer, your host.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, and I have been talking about politics, religion, and 9/11. Mike, I got something I want to run by you. Kevin, my co-host on the show, has a newsletter. Okay. And in the latest issue of his newsletter, he reported an extremely disturbing prediction. And I want to read you this. It's a substantial paragraph, and then get your comments on it.
Okay, sure.
A recent S&P stock trading report from H.L. Camp & Company is predicting that an upcoming crash of 2008 will follow a massive terrorist attack on American soil. The report is sourced to Yuval Aviv, A-V-I-V, an Israeli terrorist consultant for Fox News. The H.L. Camp reports that Aviv, who claims to have assassinated dozens of Palestinians in European countries on behalf of the Israeli Mossad, accurately predicted the 9/11 and 7/7 attacks. H.L. Camp states that Aviv gave the exact details of the London subway bombing to M15, their CIA, 1 week before it happened. According to the H.L. Camp report, Aviv says the next attack will come in a few months and will involve suicide bombers and non-suicide bombers in places that people congregate, like Disneyland, Las Vegas, and big cities like New York, San Francisco, and Chicago. It will be in shopping malls, subways at rush hour, train stations, casinos, and football stadiums, as well as in rural America and places like Wyoming and Montana. The coming attack will be simultaneous detonations around the country in 5 to 8 cities in the rural areas. This information is well known to the CIA and FBI and has been for years, but the U.S. government is not saying anything publicly about it in order not to alarm its citizens. It It also says that the U.S. response to this new attack will be for the U.S. to attack both Iran and Syria and before Bush leaves office, end quote. Then Kevin adds, by claiming that the CIA and FBI have known about the upcoming attack for years, Aviv appears to be insisting on the fact that the next 9/11 will be yet another false flag inside job.
Yes, it's totally plausible, feasible, and it shows what I was saying earlier. The American people have gone onto automatic pilot. They believe that small elites, that if they give them enough money and authority, they're going to protect us.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, a couple months hence, I mean, this is about the time of the election. I'm wondering if that is when this is going to be time for, and whether it's going to create chaos and just, you know, the government will use it as an excuse to cancel the election, suspend the Constitution, and place the country under military rule, or at least insist that Bush has to continue as president.
Absolutely. He's like Nero. He's actually physically lineaged out of Nero. He has to be removed from office. We're not impeaching him because we think he can be eased out of office. The minute some kind of terrorist attack like this happens, we need to put the finger right on him and impeach him. That's what we need to do. We need to cry false flag the minute it happens. Now, obviously, we should foil the attack by overt means. Too bad John Walsh wasn't such a fascist that he is. But we should be able to say, look, you know, we have evidence that there's going to be a human suicide bomber attack at major gatherings of human beings on planet Earth in the United States of America. Therefore, we want bomb-sniffing dogs. We want turnstiles that do not let anyone through unless they've been sniffed. You know, we need to swamp these areas and smother any possible human bomber attack, and that's something the Israelis are very much aware of because they've been hurt by the terrorist bomber attack. And the solution is within our grasp because we have enough money and technical means to where we could deny them an easy target of thousands of people, you know, with the human carried bomb situation. So we should smother this ahead of time and not wait reactively. The fact that the small elites with their so-called undercover agents are not spoiling these attacks shows that they're complicit in them. They want these attacks to happen because they want to keep revving up the kill raghead machine, you know, and obviously laying on the blame on the door of Iran.
Well, there's been some suspicion that, you know, the enticement of Georgia to attack these regions that are more sympathetic to Russia was a deliberate provocation with the American urging to try to create a scenario in which they could spin the situation from a PR point of view and make it look as though Russia had somehow attacked that little country, when it appears to be precisely the opposite, and that they want to, you know, recreate a Cold War atmosphere, so that since the whole terrorism shtick seems to be wearing thin,
right.
And since you know, Malaki and the Iraqis really do want the U.S. out of their country, that they're going to have the more reliable rationale for continuing to pump massive quantities of money into the military-industrial complex.
Right. They need a new boogeyman, and what we did was we used military incompetence. We trained the Georgians incompetently. We didn't teach them how to secure the border areas correctly, which is with fortifications, security fences, and having a balanced military. That means you have a military with tanks, artillery, and airplanes. We taught them to be mirror image of ourselves, you know, the light infantry narcissist that runs around with a rifle in his hand. Of course the Russian tanks are going to stampede and you know, swarm over these guys and kick their ass. Of course, we're training them to be stupid people like we are. So military incompetence and then some bluster, and no doubt, you know, the Russian bear comes along and kicks their butt. You know, it's just so predictable, and it's obviously instigated to get that new boogeyman. And the military-industrial think tank complex is going to benefit from a new boogeyman, Russia, to get those sales of, you know, what they call Cold War, which really are nation-state war platforms, you know, F-22s, expensive items like that.
I want you to go back to the very start of the show when you were offering, a brief but concise proof that the government had to be complicit in the crime, which had to do, I take it, with the timing and the stand down of all the military operators. Go on, Ed.
Yeah, the air defense drills thing.
Yeah.
The chances of that are zero. But let's
the
go
chance
back
of that occurring on exactly the same date that the terrorists would allegedly hijack these four aircraft happening by chance.
Zero. It's just zero. So you've got to wake up, man up, and face the fact that the U.S. government is involved in it.
Yeah.
They actually did the 9/11 attacks. So, and you've got to face that horrible possibility, and that's why when we take our oath of office, it's to protect the United States Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Yeah.
That's not just in there just as a platitude.
Foreign and domestic.
That's right. And those are the guys. So you have this E-4B kneecap plane, right, circling the White House and, you know, the Washington, D.C. area, and let's go into that. This is a 747. 747 is a tube and wing airplane. That means its wings are very small. It's designed to fly at high altitude on efficient crews to go long distances and carry a lot of passengers. So we modified this airplane to do what? To be able to orbit at high altitude with ability to communicate with the rest of our nuclear triad in case of a nuclear attack trying to take out, you know, our ground command and control stations. Basically, this is a looking glass role, you know, from the 707s. It's obviously a 707 is a very small plane, very miserable, so they upped it to a 747, lots of space, toilets, you know, places to sleep, you know, go to the bathroom, eat food, and everything. Stay on alert. Bottom line is, what's this plane doing at low altitude?
Let's pick up there when we return. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest today, Mike Sparks. Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mike Sparks, and I have been discussing 9/11, religion, politics, and I'm here to say that Hillary Clinton just moved that, and Barack Obama to be declared the nominee of the Democratic Party by acclamation.
Well, that's good, you know, because it seems like he does have a conscience, and I'll take anybody over the Republican Party that is unrepentant for all the 8 years of crimes that it's done. But getting back to the main crime of 9/11, why we can pin it on them.
Yeah, and how you were talking about the use of the 747, which is the tube and short-wing plane designed to fly at high altitude with lots of passengers.
What's it doing at low altitude circling? That is not the area that it can fly in easily. In fact, if you look on your airliner, when you look out the window when it takes off, tube and wing airliner, it has to drop its flaps, and actually its ailerons drop too, and I think they're called spoilerons. But anyway, the point is you've got to drop a lot of flap surface area down to make the wing appear to have more aerodynamic shape. It's cheating. In other words, you've got to make the wing fatter for landing and takeoff. That's why our airliners are not safe. They're really inherently dangerous, and it's corporations being greedy that they want to pack as many people in the airplane as possible as sardines. And they just, you know, drape the wings with these pod-mounted engines. It's cheap, and they're just trying to cut costs. It's inherently unsafe. So for these airplanes to fly at low altitude, their wings are not thick enough, and they're not large enough to fly with low wing loading at low altitude. For this 747 to be circling at low altitude is a guilty demeanor act. It's not sound. That means that this plane is circling to do some kind of command and control purpose during the 9/11 attack. So I say what needs to happen as soon as Dick Cheney leaves office, hopefully, all of the people who have loved ones that were lost in the Pentagon should put together a class action lawsuit. I learned this from watching the movie North Country with Charlize Theron. Apparently, when more than three people sue something over something that people would generally mock as being, oh, you're just making this up. You know, in this case, it was women being harassed. Once three or more people sue something, the reality of the act is is unshakable. So if everybody that had a loved one that got killed in the Pentagon, which class action lawsuit, Dick Cheney, saying that he should have shot down whatever it was that was coming towards the Pentagon. You know, we don't have to fine-tune exactly what it was. You know what I think it was in my previous radio shows. Doesn't matter. He should have shot down whatever it was. And we know that he didn't. We should sue his ass. You know, and then all these people, more than three, it would show that it's not just a fantasy.
Yeah.
It's a class
action.
Mike,
we've had an inquiry, by the way, about the story about McCain. Do we have multiple sources on that or the places people could go to get confirmation?
Oh, yeah. You just go to the U.S. Forestal Service survivors, you know, the veterans organizations. Now, I'll tell you that he wet-started his engine. And as soon as the fire was under somewhat control, they whisked him off the Forestal to the USS Oriskany so he wouldn't be lynched.
It was the Forestal. It wasn't the...
Kitty Hawk. Yeah, I was trying to gently correct you, you know.
Oh, okay, thank you.
USS Forestal, world's first supercarrier, and then they moved him to a very small carrier, the Oriskany, for the rest of his time until he got himself shot down, and I did a little research on that while during the break. Apparently, he was in a straight and level dive bombing approach. He got missile lock. He didn't break missile lock.
Yeah.
Flew up next to his plane, you know, started spinning out of control. The A-4 Skyhawk is a very sturdy plane. Saved his life. He was able to eject, but he didn't pull his arms in and his legs in, so he had both arms broke and one of his legs broke. You know, that's where his injury came from. Now, the North Vietnamese did torture our
prisoners. There does appear to be quite a few articles here about it.
Well, yeah, people are fascinated, and it does take courage to fly a plane. You know, it takes a lot of courage to fly a jet plane. There's no way you can take that away from a person, but you've got to face the fact we're not asking him to just be a regular dude down the street here or even running just a corporation, you know, in your neighborhood. You're asking him to be president of the United States, and he's an old man. What does he have to lose? You know, that's another aspect that hasn't been brought up. I believe Donald Rumsfeld's callous with human life because he's so old. He's about ready to die himself. So he makes callous remarks, you go with the army you have. Well, he doesn't have the rest of his life to look forward to. So he can make these callous remarks like that. So I don't think we should have people with no conscience, overly aged, as people with their hand on the football. And incidentally, the football, the nuclear launch code activated suitcase, that's what the kneecap plane is all about, that if something happened to the President of the United States, that you would have this airplane high altitude with the ability to launch a retaliatory strike against whoever does, you know, whatever this is. I'm saying we need to get it clear that whatever next terrorist attack happens in the United States, we say, whoa, horsey, stop. We better find out who the hell did it before we do a damn thing.
Yeah.
And we need to immediately raise the false flag thing. We need to say, look, you know, Bush, you know, you're around at the time when this happens, you know. Where were you and what were you doing, et cetera, and then impeach his ass. You know,
by the way, one article that appears to be quite important is from Portland Independent Media Center. It's entitled McCain's Past Makes Him a Neocon Puppet by Wayne Madsen. I have found Wayne Madsen to be an extremely reliable and diligent investigative reporter, so that's one I would recommend. And he seems to confirm it and suggests it was a that the Liberty incident was going on elsewhere with another McCain at the helm as the commanding officer of a fleet.
Well, I tried to show the psychological profile of a right-winger. A right-winger tends to be down on people, judgmental, condemnatory. At the same time, it makes him incompetent. So it's easy to see that somebody with that kind of mentality, when his father is, you know, the chief of naval operations, I don't know if he was chief of naval operations, but he was a SINCPAC for sure, could cover up, you know, the Liberty incident. Because it's all part of the same, you know, violence kind of conspiracy. The people want to kill these people that they dislike, they hate. So they would easily be in that kind of mindset. And McCain definitely has a mindset that is an FU. I won't use the F word, but, you know, he's an FU mindset.
Yeah.
You want that kind of person as President of the United States? The answer is no. We must not have somebody of that kind of mindset. He's going to bring the whole country to ruin. And, you know, if you can't vote for Obama, vote for anybody else. But whatever we do, we must not put the unrepentant Republicans back in power of the White House again.
Here's an article about it that doesn't even mention who was responsible. It says how the plane fired the rocket and set the others on fire, but it doesn't talk about who was responsible. That's really something.
Yeah, they're trying to use the electrical fault excuse. Where was electrical fault in the F-Force Phantom and it fired the rocket? when we know that McCain did do the hot foot. It's kind of like putting a hot foot on a person, but this is in fighter jets. You just let fuel pool in your tailpipe, then you start your engine, and there's a fire come out. Ha-ha, see that, dude? It was an immature prank.
What was supposed to do was to scare the shit out of the other pilot. Is that it?
Yes. It's all part of that Top Gun kind of Tom Cruise immature stuff. Well, apparently the art has some validity in life. You know, really, John McCain is the role model for Tom Cruise's Top Gun.
Mike, listen, in the 2 minutes that remain, why don't you give us a summary overview of your most important points?
Well, the 747 should not fly at low altitude, just to take off and land. The 747 was circling over the Washington, D.C. area, which is very small, would be extremely difficult for a pilot to keep the plane flying. That's what we talk about all the, you know, the airplane, you know, Flight 77 flying in the Pentagon at high speed. Is it possible or not? It's not. These planes are not designed at low altitude.
Mike, let me offer a conjecture. Could it be that they wanted to ensure communication with the White House, where Dick Cheney, for example, is in an underground bunker, but if they got very far away, they couldn't guarantee the security of the communication, so they had to keep low.
Line of sight communication will break. If you break line of sight and you have obstacles, you know, monuments, buildings, and everything like that. So it's really strange that it's flying at low altitude and it's not innocent.
But this could explain it, is that right, keeping communication with Cheney?
It's called aerial relay. When we did war better, we would actually have planes that would, their whole job would be air relay, to bounce off signals to increase the strength so that we could stay in contact with people on the ground. So I could see Cheney being an idiot, not knowing anything about the military.
Mike, I think you're doing a brilliant job. I really appreciate it. I look forward to having you back, and I want to thank you for coming on today.
Okay.
Great pleasure. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. We've had a rather remarkable conversation with Mike Sparks today. I want to thank everyone out there for listening. This is the Dynamic Duo.